So we're on Daf Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, and what we're up to is Amir. I'll just show you where it is. It's kind of smack in the middle of the Amud. You know what? Let's count from the bottom of the Amud, going up.
What? Which Daf?
Ayin Vav, 74. I mean 76. Sorry. Okay. So we're counting from the bottom of the Amud. I would say approximately, I'm just going to round it off to about 12, 13 lines up. And let's just see where we can find it. Maybe it's more like 15 lines up. The first word in the word in the line is Achila. And after that, you'll see the two dots. He'll say hello to Jeff. Yeah. Shalom Aleichem to Jeff. Okay. Now, Amir, the Mishnah establishes, is food for a lamb. And it's a kind of a straw that you give to a lamb. And the shear for an Amir is very machmir, because a pitle, the mouth of a lamb, is relatively small. And therefore, you're only going to need a small amount of straw to feed the lamb. And the Gemara asks for Asanya, we have a braisa that says Kigro Geres, that when you carry Amir out into Rishus HaRabim, you chayev for a dried date's worth. And the Gemara answers, Idi ve'idi chad shiruhu. As the Mishnah is using the term kemole pi tle, but that's identical with a grogeres. And it could be the Mishnah Dafka wanted to use the term kemole pi tle rather than the classic term grogeres, because it indicates the reason why the Chachamim would have chosen and fallen, the definition of the shear would be a grogeres, because this is food for a tle. Then the Mishnah continues and says, Ale shum vale bitsolim. So we have now the leaves of garlic and the leaves of onions. And again, this is going to feed a goat. It depends. If it's lachim, if they're still moist, then kigrogeres. Then you need a grogeres' worth. But yevashim, if they're dry, is kemole pi hagdi. So let me just see. Give me a second here. Get myself organized here. He says the following. Leaves of garlic and leaves of onion, if they're fresh, then the equivalent of a dried fig. That's going to be the shear fautzah. But yevashim, kimole pi hagdi. Okay, that doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry. Let me just go back to the Mishnah for a second. Kimole pi hagdi. Just 1 second. Just 1 second. I'm sorry. I'm just missing one thing, which I just want to make sure I have. But he says, let's see if this helps us any at all. He says, dry garlic and onion leaves are not fit for human consumption, but are eaten by kids, meaning goats. So if he takes out a kid's mouthful of dry leaves, he's chayov. So that's dry. And that's considered what? Kimole pi hagdi. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm just not sure here which is larger. Just one second. Kimole piagdi. Oh, I'm sorry. Shumole piagdi is pachos. Oh, who's he quoting here? This is what I was looking for. I'm not sure he's quoting right now. Okay, but let's take it for at face value. And he's saying that Moli Piatle we identified as a grogeris, correct? And that was the case of Amir. And Moli Piagdi is Pachos mi Piatle. So again, I don't know the biology here, but it seems that according to this interpretation, the young goat has a smaller mouth than a lamb. And if that be the case, then we are really being very machmir in the case of Oli Shum V'Oli Bitzolim Yaveshim. And we're having a minimum shear of Hotzah. Okay, so now it says V'Ein Mitztarfim. This is a quote from our Mishnah. Ein Mitztarfim Ze Im Ze. Mipnei Shalosh Shavu Shiurehem. Okay. So let's talk about the following. The Mishnah says that in the case of Tevin, right, Tevin, which is, let's see how he translates the word Tevin, he says, Tevin is straw that comes from the stalks of grains. Okay, so Tevin is the stalks of grain, and that's called Kimole Pi Para. And then he has Otza, which is stalks of beans, right, of legumes. And that's Kimole Pi Gamal. Now, the mouth, again, this is all animal zoology here, but the mouth of a camel is larger than the mouth of a cow. And that means that there's a kula in the case of the bean, you know, the bean straw, if you will, vis-a-vis the grain straw. Is everybody with me on that? Why there's a kula here? Again, it's important that we get this down. The mathematics will help us. The larger the mouth, the more makil you are, because then you're saying that unless you can fill up that larger mouth, you're not going to be chai for otzah. So the chashivas of that particular object, which is called otzah in the case of the beanstalks, you know, Jack and the beanstalk, right? So that is a kula. You're not going to be chai for carrying otzah unless it's a larger volume, which would be enough to fill the larger mouth of a gamal, whereas in the case of temen, which are the stalks of grains, right, straw that's produced from the straws of grains, in that case, the stalks of grains, in that case, we're going to be more machmir. Why? Because those stalks of grains will feed a cow that has a smaller mouth than a gamal. Okay, so I'm asking you, Rabosai, to remind me, because the next piece of Gemara will only make sense if we remember those facts. Okay. Oh. Amar Rav Yossi Bar Chanina, when it says in the Mishnah, Ein Mitztarfin, is that means L'shir Chomor Shebohen, Avol Mitztarfin L'shir Kal Shebohen. So let's try to understand. If we have, let's say we have, just give me a second. We have Tevin. We have Tevin. Correct? Oh, beautiful. We have Tevin, which we said was a Chumrah. Why? Because you only need to carry, to be chayfo tsa, the amount of tevin that would feed a cow that has a smaller mouth. Correct? So let's say you would have 50% in this particular collection of tevin of lemale pi para. And let's say you add the same exact volume of atza, you would not be chayav. Why? Because atza requires a larger amount, right? That would fill the mouth of a camel, right? We said that a camel has a larger mouth than a cow. Oh, but now let's go in the reverse direction. Let's say that he has atza, and he's got 50% of a volume of lemale pi gomel. Can he be chayav? Will he be chayav if you add the other 50% from Tevin? And that's what Rabbi Yossi is saying over here, that in this case you'd be chayav. Why? Because Tevin requires a smaller shear of Hotzah than Atzah. And the reason for that is because Tevin is cow food, whereas Atzah is camel food. So basically Rabbi Yossi is limiting the Mishnah. That when does the logic of the Mishnah, the principle of the Mishnah, apply? That's only from Lekula to Lechumra. Meaning if I need a greater volume, I can't be mashlim that volume from something that requires a larger volume. Because that would be from Kula Lechumra. But the reverse, if I have something that requires a smaller volume to be chayav, it's only pi para, and that's a chumra, that could be mashlim the shear of pi gamal, of atza. So you could have the pi para be mashlim the atza. Why? Because the pi para, in the case of tevin, is more chumra. Now the Gemara asks a basic question, and now we have to put on our Hilchus Kodshim, not Kodshim, I mean Taras brain, which is again always a challenge. He says, "The Kol Delo Shavi B'Shirayu Mi Mitztarfin." Now you're telling me that I can be Mitzaref Tevin to be mashlim the shear of atzah, according to Rabbi Yossi, because tevin has a chumradika shear, which is not equal to the shear of atzah. Atzah is more makil, you need a larger volume, a quantity of atzah, but I can be mashlim that quantity with tevin. And is that really so? Vas not. And now we're learning Taras, we're learning a Mishnah in Kalim. Now, with regard to Kalim, we have to know the following. There are two Shiurim, and we have to make sure we don't get confused, because they're both called Gimel al Gimel, which is three square. But one is Gimel al Gimel Tfachim, and the other is Gimel al Gimel Etzbos. Okay? Now, with regard to a Zav, a Zava, and a Yoledes, and a Mitzora, the Torah has something called Midras, which means that, let's say in the case of a Zav, again, I could give you four examples, but let's say in the case of a Zav, if the Zav is putting his weight on an object, let's say on a couch, a bed, whatever it is, he doesn't have direct contact with the bed. You know, let's say his cheek is not on the bed, you know, his head is over there, or he's wearing something over his head. So in that case, because his weight is on the object, That's called Tumas Medrus. And Medrus HaZav generates an Av HaTumah, which is the highest Tumah that's Metame Ochlin, Adam V'Ochlin. Here the Shear is going to be Gimel Al Gimel Tfachim. Now, if you ask me what's the Shear of a cloth, how large does a cloth have to be in order to be Makabel Tumah? So let's, for example, talk about Tumas Maga. Let's say a sheretz falls on a cloth, or the Zav actually picks up the cloth in his hands, Ledugma, so there's direct contact. In that case, all we need is Gimel Al Gimel Etzbos, which is like a little teeny piece of cloth, which is a fraction of Gimel Al Gimel Tfach. So now we're going to learn a Mishnah in Kalim. As far as the Shear of Begadim for Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned, a Beged, let's say if a Beged is made of either wool or linen, and those are the two kinds of materials that are Makabel Tumas Medrus, is Shlosha al Shlosha, so we need 3x3 Tfachim, and he writes here, as far as other tumas are concerned, oh, he mentions tumas mess. I mentioned tumas sheretz. Okay, so let's say you have a cloth inside a tent together with a corpse. He says, in that case, eino tzorch sheya bebeged sholosh al sholosh tfachim el adai sheyesh bo. It's enough that he has sholosh al sholosh etzbos. And that's a Mishnah in the same parak in Kalim. Okay. Now, Vasak. Sak, he says, is a beggar that's osui mi notzos shal izim. So this is made from the hairs of goats. Is she uro, as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned, arba al arba. Now, I'm assuming that this is all halacha l'moshe mi Sinai, but basically it's saying that, when you have tzemru pishtan, you can create a beged that's very small, because those are very significant and classic materials, normal materials to make a begadim. If you're using it to make a sackcloth of some sort out of goat's hairs, then you need a larger cloth in order to be considered a beged, and it goes on and on. Or if you make a beged out of hides, then you need chamisha tfachim al chamisha tfachim. Mapots. Mapots is made of reeds or some sort of rubbery substance that's already very cheap. Is then to make this mat, as it's mekabel tumah, you need shisha al shisha tfachim. Fine. That's the Mishnah in Masechta Kalim. Now we're going to quote a brisa, which is in Masechta Me'ilah, and the brisa wants to know what happens if you have a garment that you weave together from different materials. Can we generate a shear of whether it's Gimel Gimel Tfachim or such and such all the way till 6 al 6 in a case where you combine two different materials? So the Braisa, which is quoted in Masechta Me'ilah, says, Beged Vasak, Hasak Ve'or, Ha'or Ve'amapots, Mitztarfim Ze'im Ze'. In other words, you could be mashlim the shear. You could be mashlim the shear. Now, at this point, again, before we see Rabbi Shimon, which is the next piece, I don't want to confuse you, because Rabbi Shimon is going to change our whole perspective. But once we see this brisa, up till Rabbi Shimon's comment, this is actually a proof text that supports everything Rabbi Yossi says. Because the brisa allows you, for the sake of getting a beged for Kabbalah's Tumah, to combine different materials. But again, in the following limited way. You could take the materials of a beged, which means Tzemer Upishtan, to be mashlim the shear of a sack. So the sack requires four tefachim. If you could get that last tefach, let's say you sew it up with wool or with linen, then you'll be chayav. That's called beged l'sak. Then you can say sak l'ar, or l'mapot. In every case, what we're doing is we're being mashlim the shear, right, from the chomer to the kal. So the shear akal becomes nishlam from the shear of the chomer. So, for example, he gives the example, if let's say you don't have in the sack arba tefachim, then you could be mashlim the shear of dalet al dalet with a beged, because the beged is more chomer, it's makabel tum even with gimel al gimel. V'chein, and so too, in the case of ar, if you don't have the 5-on-5 tefachim, you can mashlim it with sack. And if the mapots, which requires a shear of 6-by-6 tefachim, and you don't have that shear, then you can be mashlim that with the R, which is more chamur, that has 5-on-5. So Rabosai, at this point, I'm ready to celebrate. Because right now, what we have is an exact duplicate, or shall we say an application, of Rabbi Yossi's position here in Masechta Shabbos, that we can mashlim the shear of atzah, which is a shear lekula, because it's enough for a pi gamal, by adding teven, which is the chumrah of the shear of the cow. But the problem is Rabbi Shimon. The Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, Matam, why is it that we can integrate these two shiurim in order to set up to generate a shiur of tumah? And basically he's asking, this is an unusual case, you know, to add flax or wool to the the hairs of a sackcloth who's made of the hairs of a goat. I mean, that's hardly, every shear is meant to generate chashivus, and this is hardly going to generate chashivus. And the answer is, says Rabbi Shimon, there's a principle here that underlies this mission and justifies it, and that is mipnei sheruyim litame moshav. Okay, now this has to do with what's called rochvei chamor, those who ride donkeys. And rochvei chamor will actually sew together, I guess for saddle purposes, they will sew together garments that are made of different materials. So I'll read to you the Hebrew here, which is Rashi's interpretation. He says, Rochvei chamor mitzarfim shnei mini begodim yachad v'osim mehem tloi. I think if I understand what tloi is, that underneath the saddle they would put a cloth, which is called a mardas, shaleo yoshvim harochvim. I thought that the cloth was underneath the saddle. He's saying it's on top of the saddle. I guess it cushions the backside of the rider from this very the rubbing, you know, saddle. Now in this case of a mardas, we have a halacha in Tumas Medris. And what is the halach in Tumas Medris? That there's Kabbalah's Tumah in the case of a human being, let's say he's a Zav, a Zav, a Ledis, a Metzorah, who's riding an animal, that the cloth that's underneath his, that he's sitting on, is Mekabel Tumas Medris, even though he's Mitzarif together many different materials. Now, again, exactly why he does this, I don't know. Maybe because, on the one hand, you know, he wants to get, you know, a material that's going to protect him. But on the other hand, you know, he doesn't need the best kind of combination. He says here that Hamakatzea Mikulam. Okay, this has to do with real heavy Tumas Medrash, I don't know. Oh, he says, B'marbas, mardas shel chamor, ein makpidim lasos tloi. They don't bother making, they don't demand that this, the shmata, so to speak, should be made from one min. V'ein makpidim, they're okay with af mikama minim. Is Ikar Kavanas Rabbi Shimoni Shemitzinu Shederach Bnei Adam Lefamim Litzarif Shnei Minei Begodim Elu Litzarach Mardas V'lachain Li'olam Mol Behem Tziruf L'Kabel Tuma. Now, once we find one case in the context of Tumas Medrash of Azav where there's a Tziruf of different Minim, then we can extrapolate, we can universalize that, and any cloth that's made of a tziruf of these minim will fulfill the shear that's necessary for Tumas Medrash. This changes our whole perspective. Gemara says, Taima, why are we able to be mitzarif to minim of begodim for the shear of Kabbalah's Tumah? Is because the ru'uyim li tamei moshav. It's only because we find this precedent of Moshav, and there in the case of Moshav we add together these different materials to create a Mardas, and this all reflects the Shita Rabbi Shimon. The implication is Aval Ein Roy Litame Moshav. If we don't find any kind of Tumas Moshav where you Mitzarif different Minim is low, we would not be mitzarif different minim, and each minim needs its requires its own shear. So how could Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina say that all the minim of our Mishnah, if you go from a shear chomor to be mitzarif to a shear kal, then you're mitzarif together? Omar Rava. Here we have to turn to Daf Ayin Vavam and Beis. Hachinami Chazil Dugma. That forget about the case of the cloth that's put by the donkey rider over the saddle. In general, people who sell materials, right? You have a garment center where you go buy, you know, rolls of garments. They mix together different kinds of these things. But again, we're not talking about garments here. We're talking about food for animals, right? So when you have different types of food for animals, like we had the, you know, the stalks of the beans and the stalks of the grains, and what else do we have on the list here? We had grass and coverings over onions and garlic, etc., etc. Hamocher mine machole behema. If your job is you sell animal food, I guess that was a major industry, and probably even today, is then even though shonim, even though they're different kinds of food for different animals, no sein bechalono ma'at mikol min b'min, he mixes together all these different minim in his window, in his showcase, latzigam, to present them in front of the konim, the buyers, v'noach lo shiyu mechubarim yachat. And why does he pile one on top of the other? Shim lokein, if not for that, yispazru al yidei ruach machmas shiuram hamuot. In other words, if he's putting together, you know, very small samples that are limited in quantity, the wind would tend to blow them away, and his solution to that problem is to pile them up one on the other. That small volumes of animal food, and by putting them all together, he creates a certain weight that will prevent the wind from blowing them away. So, to make a long story short, it's very feasible and very common or normal to expect that we carry out small volumes that are made up of combinations of different kinds of animal food, and therefore we can be metzarif them together. Okay, now we're talking about food for human beings, and you are carrying them out, hamotzi ochlim kigro geres. So the minimum shear is this, he calls it a te'ena yevesha shetzomka oven is kavtza, so it's a dried fig, chayav. Umitztarfim ze'im ze'. All different kinds of foods for human beings can join together to create the shear of Gogeris, with neshashavu b'shiureya, because they all have the same shear. Chutz, with the one exception of klipasan, the coverings over fruits, garineyem, their pits, v'okzeyem, are the, that part of the bottom of the fruit, which is called the oketz. You know, maybe you could call it like the tail of the fruit. And those are not mitztarif to a shear of grogeris, because they're not edible. Or they're not humanly edible, at least. You could do many different things with the klipos and the oktsim. You know, maybe you could dry them, maybe you could feed them to animals, maybe even in the case of pits, I think we had in the Gemara Bamem Adlikin, they used to use it as fuel, but those are not ochlin. And the halach of tziruf, shir, for hotzah, in ochlin, only applies to human, to different types of human food. Visuban. Umursanon. So these are types of bran. Today bran is considered healthy, but I guess in those days bran was more of an animal food. He says the following. He says, except for their shells, their pits, their stems, and coarse bran and fine bran. So suban he defines here as coarse bran and mursan as fine bran. Okay. He says that these come from the shell of a wheat kernel, and you do disha, you pound the wheat and the kernel falls off. So I don't know, maybe that's not exactly what our bran cereals are made of. Maybe they mix it with flour, and it adds a certain kind of healthy, it's healthy for the digestive system. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, chutz mi klipe adoshim. We don't count the shells of adoshim. Shemiz bashlos imoyim. So what does that mean? He says that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the shells of lentils do not count towards the measure of a grogeres, because people cook lentils without first shelling them, and then they eat the peels as well. Therefore, the peels are considered part of the lentil. Oh, I see. I didn't cop what's going on here. Rabbi Yehuda is coming to be machmir, and he's saying, don't give me a general absolute rule that things like klipos are not mashlim the shear of hotzah because they're not edible. There are exceptions to that rule. For example, the shells of lentils that are often cooked together with the lentils are cooked without shelling them because they eat these shells as well. And if they eat the shells as well, that sets it up as Michael Adam, and therefore it's Mashlim the Shear. Now, it seems that the Tanakama would reject Rabbi Yehuda, and the outer shell is excluded in the Shear, because the shell usually falls off at harvest time, and it's not eaten. In other words, even though Rabbi Yehuda has a case in which you do cook the shell with the lentil together, but the Chachamim hold that that's not generally the case. Usually the shells will be removed already at the time of harvest. They'll never make it to your pot. So the Gemara says, V'subin u'mursa lo mitztarfin. What are we going to do with a Mishnah Challah? And the Mishnah Challah is going to assume that Subin and Mursin, these various kinds of brands, fine brand and coarse brand, are actually eaten in a bread. And the shear of an Isa for Afrashas Challah, right, you need a shear of an Isa, and the shear of an Isa is a combination of any of the five species of grains. Okay, we have to see exactly what the shear is. That has to do with something called Isas Midbar, because in the Midbar it says Reishis Arisosechem, and that's equivalent to the shear of the Omer of Man that fell on a daily basis, which is called Asiris HaEfa, which is an Efa is considered Yudches Kabin, and Asiris HaEfa is a Kav, Echad Ushminis Kav. So it's 1.8 Kavim. Alright, this is really complicated what the shear of Challah is. In any event, Chameshes Revoim, in other words, when we talk about how much Kemach, we're talking about 5/4, that's right, one and a quarter of a Kav of Kemach, V'od, and you could add more than Chameshes Revoim. Okay, fine. Chayovim Bechala, but it's Hain V'Suban U'Mursan. That the shear of Isa to generate a Chiyuv Hafrashas Challah is made up not only of Kemach, meaning the actual, you know, kernels of the grains that were ground and made into flour, but it also includes the Subin and the Mursin. That's also mitztarf to the shear of Challah. And the Gemara is assuming now an equation between the shear of Challah, as far as Tzir of Shear is concerned, and the shear of Hotzah B'Shabbos. If you're willing, as the Mishnah says in Challah, to integrate the shear of Subin into the shear of Isa for Chiv Challah, Subin and Mursa, then why not do the same for the shear of Hotzah? Omar Abaye, Shekein Ani Ochel Pito Be'isa Blusa. That the shear of Challah is different. And it depends on the Ani, or also depends on, even the Ani could validate the shear of the Isa. And an Ani, in order to expand the volume of his bread at a very cheap cost, or if he's buying bread that's made, he would buy the cheap bread that's actually made with the Mursan and the Subin inside, and therefore there's a Chiv Challah. Why? Because when the Torah says Lechem Ha'aretz, even Lechem that is edible for an Ani is included in the definition of Lechem Ha'aretz. So, for example, if you would have bran bread, you would still make hamotzi lechem in ha'aretz. But with regard to Shabbos is concerned, we need a certain chashivas for the shear. And this kind of bread that's made up of a mixture of subin and mursan, that's not considered your classic, you know, stam lechem that most people would consider chashiv. So it's a lower class bread. So with regard to the shear of Esau, the Torah says lechem aretz, anything that's considered lechem. And the shame lechem means that's edible even if only for a poor person who's trying to save money. But as far as the shear of Hotzah is concerned, for that we need a chashivus. And the chashivus is going to be a grogeris worth of the five species of grains without the admixture of subin. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Chutz Miklipe Adoshim Amisbashlos Imoem. What about the case of lentils, that sometimes you cook the lentils together with the chaff, and therefore the chaff is now, the covering is now mitztaref to the shear? So the Gemara asks, well, why does Rabbi Yehuda single out Adoshim? Adoshim in Pulin Lo. Are you going to tell me that in the case of Pulin, the klipos are not mitztarif to the shear? V'atanya, we have a braiser of Yehuda Omer with regard to all klipos that are not mitztarif to the shear, but the exception is going to be klipos of Pulin ve'adoshim. So why does the Mishnah single out Adoshim when the Brisa expands it to include Pulin as well? Let's see if he tells you what the difference between the two is. He says Adoshim are the shells of klipe Adosh, shells of lentils, and Pulin are the shells of beans. All right. I mean, that we figured out on our own. So my answer is lo kasha habachadati habatiki. The brisa that says that you can combine the klipos of not only lentils but also beans, that's talking about kidneyos chadoshos. That's called chadati. And when you have kidneyos chadoshos, then the mitzaref, even the coverings, the klipos of the pulin. But by tiki, our Mishnah is talking about a case where he's using klipe adoshim of yeshanos, of kidneyos yeshanos, the older kidneyos, and yeshanos, then although in the case of adoshim, of lentils, they're willing to throw into the pot even the shells, but not in the case of pulin, of beans. So Gemara says, Atiki my time alone. Why is it that in the case of pulin, if they're old, then we're not mitztarif them? Amar avo mipnei shenirim kizvuvim bekara. Okay, let's see what that means. He says, it looks like there are flies in the plate. In other words, no one eats the klipim of these older beans, and therefore it doesn't have any chashivus at all in the case of these older beans. He says they're black, and the bean shells blacken with age, and therefore when you cook older beans, he says first you remove the shells, so it would not appear as there are flies in the dish. Very interesting, because you know, a lot of our foods, you know, we see different black things, and you know, we're so sensitive to bugs and everything. The first thing that occurs to us is maybe one of those black things floating around in the tavshil, are they bugs? Okay, so Adjan Olecha Klal Gadol. So what I'd like to do now, we have about 10-15 minutes, depending on how long you can stay, is just to give an introduction to the first Mishnah in Perek HaZorek, which is the 11th Perek, on Daf Tzadivav, Amid Aleph. So the Masifta uses this opportunity for Perek HaZorek to go back to the basics of Hotzah, and he says the following. We had the first Perek of Shabbos, of Masechta Shabbos, that dedicated itself to Hotzah Mirshus Lishus. And then we had the fifth and the sixth prakim, which spoke about what are the items that you're not allowed to take out to Rishus Arabim. Those are all Drabbanans, in the case of a woman or a man, and ornaments and so forth. In the case of an animal, the animal's working for you. Then we had three full prakim that were dedicated to the shear of Hotzah. How much do you have to carry out to be chayav for Hotzah? And those were the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th prakim, ending up with Hamatznia. And now, the Tana is going to dedicate a perek to Zrika. Not only Zrika, but also what's called Hoshata. Hoshata is where you stretch your arm out with an object and you give it to someone else who receives the object. And we can talk about two different cases. We can talk about Zrika and Hoshata Mirshus Lushus, or Zrika and Hoshata in 4 Amos Birshus Harabin. Actually, let me check that out. There's no Hoshata of Dalet Amos Birshus Harabin. That doesn't exist. But anyway, Zrika for sure, Dalet Amos Birshus Harabin. Now, Zrika and Hoshata, he says, are toldos of Hotzah. And the Gemara is going to try to prove from Psukim how he derived both these toldos. And if not from Psukim, then at the very least from the Mishkan. which is very fascinating, and again, this is going to be the one of the first sugyas here in Perek HaZorik. We don't find in other, in general in toldos that we look to the Mishkan to see if those toldos were implemented in the Mishkan. But somehow, because of Meleches Rika as a different kind of Malacha, and Oshot as well, we could use the term Malacha Grua, we need to find some sort of case in the Mishkan where they implemented Zrika and Oshata. Then he gives a general introduction to Hotzah Mirshus Lushus, or the fact that there are different kinds of Rishuyos in Shabbos. He says that for Hotzah you're only Chayev from one Rishus to the other, and you have to be Oker in one Rishus and Miniach in another Rishus. If let's say you were Oker in one Rishus, you went into another Rishus, but then you went back to the original Rishus, and you did Anoch in the original Rishus, then you're Potter. Chachomim will prohibit all cases where you started a Malach with an Akira, and you continued even without Anocha, or where you were responsible for taking the object into another Rishus and putting it down, even if you didn't do the Akira. That's all Asur Midirabana. Then he says you're only chayav for an akira or a hanocha me'al gabi mokom dalet al dalet. In other words, the akira has to be from a mokom choshev that has the shear 4 tvachim by 4 tvachim. Same for the hanocha, with one exception, and that's yado shel adam. And this was a sugi that we learned at the very beginning of Masechta Shabbos, that yado shel adam chashuva kemokom dalet al dalet. And that's going to be very important for Zrika, because I might throw something into your hands, and if it lands in your hands, we used to call it Willie Mays. I'm really dating myself. Is he still alive? I mean, he would have to be like 120 if he's alive, no? Do you remember Willie Mays? He used to catch it like this. So that's the case in Zrika, where you'd be chayef for Zrika, because Yodo Shalom Chashuv Lo Dalet Al Dalet. If on the other hand he catches it like everybody else used to catch it, then nobody's chayef, because the Zorek did an Akira but not an Anoch, and the one who caught the ball, he only did an Anoch without an Akira. Anyway, none of that is in the Masifta, by the way. I don't think they ever heard of Willie Mays, but... Then he goes on to say that there are 4 Rishuyos of Shabbos. 2 of them are Doraisa, and 2 of them are, well, one of them is not a Rishus at all, we could call it a Rishus, and one of them is a Rishus Derabbanan. So we have Rishus HaYochid. Now he says that Rishus HaYochid is a has the width of Arba al Arba, and it has Hekef Mechitzos, and the Mechitzos are Asara Tfachim high. He does not tell you how many mechitzas you have. Let me just see if in the footnote maybe he'll tell you that. In the footnote he says you can have a tail, right, that protrudes from the ground, some sort of a little hill, and it's 10 Tfachim high. That's about, I don't know, waist height or something like that, I don't know. And it's 4 Tfachim by 4 Tfachim. Or you can have a charitz, right, a subterranean hole in the ground that is 10 tfachim deep and is 4 tfachim wide, 4 by 4 tfachim wide. Or you could even have a kli, a utensil, that you hold up with a stick. That's called a traskal, if I remember correctly. And it's 10 tfachim above the ground. And again, it has a width of 4 tfachim by 4 tfachim. So he doesn't tell you how many mechitzos you need, because that's a gigantic sugya. I'm learning a little bit of Erevin now, and in Erevin you have like 3 different shitas in the Tanoim. One shita has an area that's surrounded by 2 mechitzos, is a Rishus HaYochid Doraisa. Another shita requires 3 mechitzos, that's the general acceptance, and there's one shita that requires 4 mechitzos. Okay. Now we have Rishus HaRavin. And that's a very complicated business. What exactly is Rishus HaRavim? Just to oversimplify it, it's got the width of 16 amos, and it's got to be open on both sides. It cannot have a ceiling, a tikra, And some say, and that's, you know, almost all our kulos in Erevin rely on this, that you need another requirement that Ovrim ba shishim ribui b'nei adam, 600,000 people will traverse this area. Now, the airspace above a Rishus HaYachid goes all the way to the Rakia. The airspace of Rishus HaRabim only goes up 10 Tvachim high. Above 10 Tvachim, we get to the fourth area, which is called a Makom Ptur. But first we'll take a break and we'll talk about a Rishus DeRabbanon, which is called a Karmelis. Like, for example, a Bika, you have an open area. It's neither Rishus HaYachid nor Rishus HaRabim. It doesn't have Mechitzos, so it cannot be a Rishus HaYachid. It's not a Rishus HaRabim because it's not open to the Rabim. It's off on the side. And the Chachamim said that in this area, we're going to consider it like both Rishus HaYochin and Rishus HaRabim min Rabbanon, and that's called a Karmelis. And you're not allowed to carry within a Karmelis four Amos. You're not allowed to take from Rishus HaRabim into a Karmelis. You're not allowed to take from a Karmelis into Rishus HaYochin, etc. It has all the Chumras that you could ever imagine. The airspace of a Karmelis goes only as far as 10 Tfachim height, and above 10 Tfachim, the Rabbanan never made the Gzera of Karmelis, which by the way indicates that Karmelis is fundamentally, again on a Rabbanan level, like a Rishus HaRabim. And finally we have a Makom Ptur. It's not a Rishus HaRabim, it's not a Karmelis, it's not a Rishus Yochid, it's nothing. No Gzera is the Rabbanan. You're allowed to take from a Makom Ptur into a Rishus HaRabim. You're allowed to take from a Makom Ptur into Rishus HaYochid. What you're not allowed to do, Min Rabbanan, is to take from Rishus HaYochid, put it into a Karmelis, and then pick it up, put it into a Makom Ptur, and then pick it up in Rishus HaRabim and take it from the Makom Ptur. In other words, you can't use a Makom Ptur as a way of transporting an object from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid, or vice versa. But to take it from a Makom Ptur into Rishus HaYochid, and so forth and so on, that you're allowed to do. A Makom Ptur does not have the width of Arba al Arba Tfachim, and Mutal Taltel Bekulo. You can take something from one end of a Makom Ptur to another end of a Makom Ptur as far as it has to go. So let's just quickly get a feeling for the Mishnah in Hazorik. Hazorik Mirshus HaYochid L'shus HaRabim, L'shus HaRabim, L'shus HaYochid Chayov. And this is the Toldah of Zrika, the Toldah of Hotzah. But what about, this is the more complicated case, Hazorik Mirshus HaYochid L'shus HaYochid L'shus HaRabim Ba'emtza. Is Rabbi Akiva Machayev Chachomim Potrim? Okay, now, what exactly is the case of Chachomim Potrim? You throw something from a Rishus HaYochid through a Rishus HaRabim, and you end up in a Rishus HaYochid. Now, there's a principle of Rabbi Akiva, which the Gemara mentioned back on Daf Dalet, which is called Kluta Kamisha Huncha Dami. From Rabbi Akiva's perspective, when an object enters into the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, just one second, just the opposite. According to the Chachamim Potrim. All right, he says in the footnote, HaGemara Lekamon Tzadi Zayin Tevayer Bi'eza Ofen Meduvar Matama Machlokis. They do hold like Kluta, no? Well, I would assume the Chacham Potrim. He threw it from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid. So if it landed in Rishus HaRabim, and if you apply the principle of Kluta, then Rabbi Akiva makes sense that Kluta Kamisha Huncha. So basically, he should be chayiv shtayim, perhaps. Again, you have to know. But he threw it from Rishus HaYochid, it landed in Rishus HaRabim, because Kluta Gamishahun Chadami, and therefore he took it again from Rishus HaRabim into a Rishus HaYochid. Chachom Potrim, they never accepted Kluta Gamishahun. Ketzad, what's the case in the Chachom in Potrim? Shtei Guzrich, Guz Teros, Zu Keneged Zu. Bishnei b'tzidei rishus harabim is ha-moshit v'azorek mizu lezu potur, but hoi shtei b'duta achas ha-moshit chaya v'azorek potur. So here's where the Mishnah gets into the malacha called moshit, which is a tolda of hotzah. And moshit means when you take an object and you pass it on to someone else who receives it in another rishus. Now, we have two different cases, and they're fundamentally different one from the other. In one case, which is called Gustros, Zu Keneged Zu, then he's potter from Moshit. But if it's Zu, if it's Beduta Achas, then he's Chayev from Moshit. So let's imagine the case of a veranda, and you walk out of your house, and the veranda has the status of a Rishus HaYochid, correct? It's surrounded by the Mechitzos. You have a neighbor who also has a gustra, he also has a porch. And you stretch your arm out with let's say a beam, because that's going to be the case in the Mishkan, and you give it over to him, and he receives it. So the Meleches Moshit, because of the way the agolos were structured, and they passed the beam, a keresh, from one agolo to the next, is if both Rishus HaYochis, both Gustros, are on the same side of the let's say the building, that's called Meleches Moshit. But let's say you have your Gustra on one side, you have a Rishus HaRabim, and then on the other side of the Rishus HaRabim, which is like Shnei Tzidei Rishus HaRabim, there's another Gustra, and you pass on the beam to the other Gustra. That's not the way they did it in the Mishkan. And again, although logically, both are Moshit, they both start with Rishus HaYochid, end with Rishus HaYochid, and go through Rishus HaRabim, but nevertheless, in the case of Hotzah, which is a Malacha Grua, we are absolutely confined to the way they did it in the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, it was not Shnei Gustra, Zu Keneged Zu, on two sides of Rishus HaRabim, so they never actually went from one Agola through Rishus HaRabim to another Agola on the other side, but rather they gave it from one Agola to the one in front of them, on the same side, and that's called Shteyam Biduta Achas, is then HaMoshit Chayav. HaMoshit Chayav Vazorek Potur. Why? Because if he throws an object from one Rishus HaYochid to another Rishus HaYochid through Rishus HaRabim, then in such a case, we don't have a principle called Kluta Kamisha Huncha. The Chachamim never accepted that. And therefore, he never actually was Motzi, or in this case, Zorek, from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. It may have gone through the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. And again, we're going to talk about a case where it's very low, and it goes below 10 Tfachim, but in a case where it goes above 10 Tfachim, then if we don't accept Kluta Kamisha Huncha Dami, then there was never a Hotzah from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. Nevertheless, in Moshit, because that's what they did in the Mishkan, Shekach Hoys HaAvodas HaLeviim, Shtei Agolos Zu Achar Zu B'Rishus HaRabim. Okay, so they were set up on the what we call the length of Rishus HaRabim. So if you're moving towards the Machda Leviyah, so let's say you have one Agola here and another Agola here, he was Moshit, the Krashim, from this Agola to that Agola. And again, they were both on the same side of Rishus HaRabim. So that's called Gustra Achas, or Duta Achas, Yechai from Moshit. Avaloyu Zorkin, but they never threw a Keresh from one agola to the other. Hence, we don't have this chiddush that you can pass something on by throwing it from one gustra, which is one rishus hayachid, to another gustra, which is rishus hayachid, with rishus haramim in the middle. They never did that with zrika. They only did it with moshita, with hoshata, and therefore we could only derive meleches moshit. So this is just a little bit of an introduction to Perek HaZorek. Perek HaZorek is a very long perek, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just see. It goes all the way to Abone, which is Kuf Beis. Let me see if I'm right. Yeah, Kuf Beis. This is unusual for Masechta Shabbos. You know, it's more than 15 pages long. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. He has an interesting footnote here. Nechleku Arishonim im af lechatchila muta lahoshit b'shnei tzidei rishus harabim. So we said in the Mishnah that there's no chiv moshit in shnei tzidei rishus harabim, between the two gustros. So you're allowed to do that hoshata lechatchila. The Rashba and the Meiri hold it's also min rabbana. The Mishnah says potter, and that's a pretty strong raya. Potter always means potter aval asur. However, Rabbeinu Chananel writes that it's mutter. And in fact, the Rashba in Erevin, as opposed to the Rashba here, or in Avodas HaKodesh, another say for the Rashba, he says in Erevin that it's mutter. And why does the Mishnah say potter? Because since we're talking about Rishuyos that belong to two different people, then Midrabbanan, it's asur to be motzi from one Rishus HaYochid to somebody else's Rishus HaYochid. But if it would be all one person's Rishus HaYochid, then if he has a double gustros on two sides of Rishus HaRabim, then it would be mutal chatchila to be moshit from one gustra to the next. In addition, we're talking about gustros that are lemaila mi asar tfachim, and therefore the avir rishus haram lemaila mi asar tfachim is a makom ptur. And as far as hoshat is concerned, if it's, you know, two gustros beduta achas on the same side lengthwise, right, then you would be chayav even though you're going through a makom ptur. And the reason for this is because what's below that makom ptur is a makom ahalech, is a place where the rabbim go, and that's what makes it similar to the case of Moshe of kachoya avodas hamigdash and shtei agolos, etc. Moshitin esakroshim miagola lagola, and the Rashba calls this a gzeres akosuv that you should be chay for shota above 10 amos, 10 tfachim in rishus. You know, when it goes through the airspace of a makom ptur. The Pnei Yoshua tries to give an explanation for this chiyuv. Okay, fine. Now, when we talk about avodas halevim, which branch of levim are we talking about? We're talking about the Bnei Merari, hayunosim. They would carry the krashe of Mishkan. That was their particular responsibility. And in fact, there were four agolos. So I have a diagram here in the Masifta of four agolos. V'hayu ma'amidim, they would structure shtei agolos samach l'mishkan u'shtei agolos lifneihem. Okay, so there are two agolos that were closer to the Mishkan, and then there were two agolos that apparently were behind those two agolos. Ha'omed ba'agola smucha Lemakomam Mishkan, Hainotel Karshe, Keresh Umavi Umaviro, La Omeid Bagola Smuchalo Milafonov, Viachashetismale Agola, Haimimalia Sagola Smuchalo Mishkan. So let's say you had the Agola that was closer to the Mishkan, they would pass the Krushim to the Agola behind them. And then once that agola was filled up, then the agola that was close to the Mishkan would now be filled with the krashim. But lo ayu moshitin krashim me'agola shebitzad echad la'agola shebitzad sheni. There were two rows of two agolos in the Mishkan, so the passing of the krashim was only from one agol to the one behind it on that side, but not to cross over to the other side, to the agolas there on the second side. The agolas themselves are called Rishus HaYochid. I mean, we should make that point. That's obvious, but... And why is that? Because they had the 4x4 tefachim width, and they were 10 tefachim high. The avir of Rishus HaRam was between the two agolos. And Mokom Amidas HaGolos, why is that area where the agolos stood considered Rishus HaRam? Lefisha Hayu Mamidim Es HaGolos Kshei Mechuvonos Linsoa Achrei Amud Hanan Shaiolech Lefneim. So the agolos was set up in a direct line that they would now travel with the Amud Hanan that would go in front of them, and Mokom HaLichasam, the place where they would go, was a Rishus HaRam. Okay, then we'll stop here, and I'll wish everyone a great day.